the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Joining me right now, Marshall Field, CEO of California Green Tree. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, believe me.
So this is fun. We get to talk about the cannabis industry.
Yes.
First guest I've had on that has been a part of this industry. So I've got a whole lot of questions for you. Let's start with your business. Tell us about California Green Tree.
Well, California Green Tree is a company set up for cultivation. We grow and we'll have three different facilities. We'll average about 29,000 square feet, and we'll grow an average of 15,000 pounds per year per facility. All different strains and for all different purposes and all different, I would say all different strengths. A lot of the dispensaries always like it. Some, they're a little different. They're all different names. They've given them all different names through the years. So some are a little stronger than others, and everybody has their idea of what they like and what type of THC level they want to buy.
Right. So you're actually growing the cannabis. So you're one part of the industry. Before we started, you shared that if you're on the business side of the cannabis industry, there's kind of three different parts to it. Can you share what those three parts are?
Yeah, the beginning part of it is the cultivation side of it. And then you have the marketing, and then you have the sales, which are the dispensaries. We're going to be part of the cultivation side of it. We're going to be the grower. And then there is coming January 2018, they're going to be a distribution side of it, and then the actual dispensary side of it. So there'll be three different parts to it, and they're all going to be working together. The industry now is going to be highly regulated as of January 2018. Everything has to be lab tested, and everything has to pass a lab test. So there's no pesticides that can show up in the lab report. Otherwise, the dispensary can't buy them, put it on the shelves. And we're going to be growing all organic, no pesticides whatsoever.
Because of course, right now it's legal for medical use, but then it will be legal for recreational use come January 2018. So tell me a little bit more about how the industry is now and where it's going given this change in California.
You know, today you need to have a medical card, and that allows you to go into a dispensary and to purchase the cannabis is not as much as you want. There is a limit. I have approximately an ounce or two. But come January, the law is going to change. They're going to combine the medical and the recreational. So you basically can walk in the door and buy your amount that you really want to have. And there's a limit to, I think it's going to be 3 ounces will be your maximum per transaction. And the pricing will be a little bit different. The taxes will be a little bit different. If you're on a medical card, then you're paying a little bit less in tax. If you're on the recreational side, you'll pay a little bit more in taxes to the state of California.
And right now you're preparing for that January date, right? You're not yet providing cannabis for the distributors.
Yes, we'll have three facilities up and running, and we'll be providing the cannabis to right now legal dispensaries. There's 2,700 legal dispensaries in the state of California. We think there's another 2,700 illegal dispensaries that are not licensed. But come January, you have to have your license, otherwise you won't be able to stay open.
So how did you get into this business?
That's a long story, but we started
we'll take the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, we started about a year ago, and we were selling a dispensary, and we realized, wow, this is a terrific business for people to get into. And we started, we looked at it, and we said, you know what? What we think we could do very, very well is actually do the cultivation side of it. We looked at the numbers, we looked at the quality, we looked at our abilities to be able to develop it. I'm also a contractor, developer, investment banker, so this was easy for me to do.
Yeah, so take us behind the scenes. I got to see the images, and I'm sure we'll show video, but really describe to me, what does it look like and to create this space where you're growing cannabis?
It looks like a large garden with hundreds and hundreds of plants growing all at the same time. And it's set up a little differently. They have a section of it where you're just starting to grow, where the plants are little bitty things, about 3 or 4 inches. And then they have another section where they're about 18 inches. And then you have the large room that actually has where the majority of the plants are. And that's called the flower room. And you might have a couple thousand plants in there.
Wow. Okay. And I know that you grow different types of
different strains.
Cannabis, different strains,
right.
I guess is what you say.
Yeah.
And that is reflective of how much THC, how potent it is. So tell me a little bit about the science behind what goes into creating different types of cannabis plants.
Well, over the years, they had different strains that came from Jamaica and Africa and California and Humboldt County and Washington. And they started developing these strains and giving them names. And they are all a little different potency. And they were very interesting. As time went on, they started mixing the different strains to create a very higher, much higher level of the THC. And that's the important stuff that people like to get to use. That the higher the THC, the stronger it becomes. So, and some people think it's too high, so they like to go with the certain strains that have a lower THC level.
So you're already anticipating this and you're creating a brand that you will sell called Happy Brand.
Happy Brand.
Very fitting.
Yes.
And so you're already anticipating that people will be going for recreational use for different purposes. So tell me a little bit about the research you did, about what you think your customers will want and what you're providing them to meet those needs.
You know, each customer, we were talking about this earlier, that I was in a dispensary and I was standing next to a grandmother and a granddaughter, and they were both asking for something a little bit different. They were asking for something that would help her sleep, and the granddaughter was looking for something that would take have a little bit more fun attached to it. So the grandma was looking for something a little bit easier, a little less than the THC level, and the granddaughter was looking for something a little bit more potent. But they were there for the same reason. And the Happy Brand will actually label the strength of the THC on the label, so you know exactly what you're buying.
Okay, yeah, you're actually going to give it a number and different levels.
THC,
so depending on what it is
10,
you're looking.
Yeah, yeah, below THC or Happy Brand 28 would be much higher.
So if someone wanted to legally grow marijuana, what all goes into starting what you've started?
Well, you know, let's say you go out there and you buy some seeds and you put it in a little bit of water and you grow some roots, and then you put it in a 1 gallon a pot with some soil and feed it and give it some nutrients and some fertilizer, and voila, it grows like weed.
Grows like weed.
And it actually
unintended.
Does.
Unintended.
Yeah.
So in your case, obviously, you've very much so scaled. So tell me what goes into scaling it the way you have.
Well, for example, we're going to harvest about 400 plants a day, or actually per week. And that's per facility. We'll be planting about 1,200 plants per week, because you have to keep on growing a whole bunch of them to keep on feeding that final production. And each facility will probably harvest per year about 15,000 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
So going back to that legal word, obviously not anyone can just start growing and selling marijuana. What are some of the legal hoops that you have to jump through,
well,
and considerations?
Each city, every local municipality, you have to be licensed in each municipality. And that license will allow you to get a state license come January 2018. So you need to pass all the tests and be approved by the FBI, Department of Justice, prior to getting your license in the local community.
Got it. And where do you think that the industry is going to be headed now that it is going to be legal in California?
There's a lot of people who want to get into the industry. And I think as right now, it is a growth industry, and it's somewhat the Wild West. But as time goes on, it'll get a lot more sophisticated.
Obviously, right now, it's legal for medical use. Whether or not everyone is using it for medical use is a whole nother question. So do you think that the consumption will significantly increase once it's, you know, wide open and legal to use for recreational use?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of restrictions now. They're going to be coming in January 2018. So you have to be clean. You have to be somewhat organic. You can't use any pesticides. So over the last, 30, 40 years, a lot of the growers outside have been using a lot of pesticides, they can't pass the test. There's going to be a lot of growers now who are not going to be able to actually sell their cannabis in the state of California because they won't be able to pass the lab test. So when the recreational hits, you're going to see a huge demand. Like they just saw in Nevada, they ran out of cannabis in 10 days.
Okay, because the supply is going to go down, you're saying.
The supply will go down.
Because of increased restrictions. And then the demand will go up because all of a sudden a new set of people
yes.
is able to
yes.
purchase.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. We are going to take a quick break, but so much more when we come back. Sit tight. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Business Rockstars.
I don't care if you work hard, and neither does the market. Everybody works hard. The successful people are the people who sacrifice more. If your habits are just like your friends, where they're going to Coachella and the music festivals and all those other things, or watching Netflix on binging, and you're doing all the same things as them, get out of here. You're not an entrepreneur. So if you're willing to, like, have an honest conversation with yourself, are you really willing to not go to those birthday parties, stay up till 3 a.m, and those stupid things like eat Top Ramen forever? That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. And if you're not willing to do those things, get out of here, because you're going to lose. That's the only thing I can promise you.
Hey, check out this report of our Office 365 email and the threats sitting in users' inboxes.
Wow, how did you get this?
There's a free tool called Barracuda Email Threat Scanner that can quickly and safely scan our Office 365 email for hidden threats like spear phishing and domain fraud.
Really?
Yeah, Barracuda Email Threat Scanner identifies hidden threats and employees most at risk for a cyber attack, all summarized in a complete report.
This is great.
Get your free email threat scan now at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's RANK to 79645.
You should. Business Rockstars.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the CEO of California Green Tree. So we kept on saying how January 2018, that's the big month in California when it becomes legal cannabis, that is, for recreational use. So on a larger scale, how is this going to positively impact, or maybe in some ways negatively impact, I don't know, our state and our country?
Well, for California, California is really going to benefit via taxes. They're going to collect millions and millions of dollars worth of taxes. At the other side, they're also going to regulate the quality of the cannabis. And that's very, very important. Everybody wants to go into a dispensary and say, you know what? I'm buying the best quality cannabis I can buy. I'm buying something that I know is not going to hurt me. I want to know if there's any pesticides. I don't want that. That could hurt me. So the new regulations today really regulate the use of pesticides. You're really smoking something that is going to be very, very, very clean. And that's something that's going to happen in January when the new law takes effect.
And then, of course, there are other things like it won't be criminalized and obviously illegally sold and all of that that we could go into. But I don't know if there's anything you want to say
to that.
Well,
yeah, in California, as long as you're in California, you can go into any dispensary in the state of California with your medical card today and actually buy cannabis. Comes January, you don't need a medical card to go into any dispensary in the state of California. Now, if you are a resident of Nevada, you can do it today because it's recreational. But today until January, everything you have to go into a dispensary, you have to have your medical card. But the state of California, once the new regulations take effect, come January, you will be able to go into it for recreational purposes and pay the tax, and that tax will go to the state of California.
Now, obviously, there are some people who are skeptical of marijuana becoming legal for recreational use, concerned about some of the things that may pop up, like consuming cannabis and driving and some of those other things that may be affected. Any insight into those concerns?
Yeah, you really don't want to be using cannabis and drive, just like alcohol. They can't detect it that well today, but they will. You really and truly, it's for home use and or while you're walking on a beautiful trail.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So there's a big opportunity for investment. Can you speak to that?
Well, you know, a lot of the younger people looking to start a business should learn all about what they can. You go online, you register, you get magazines sent to you, you read all the articles, possibly you want to grow a little bit for yourself. It's a good experience to get a couple of seeds and grow it in your backyard and see what you can do with it. But it's important that you actually learn what you're doing. And it's not that difficult. There's so many online, YouTube, and they teach you actually how to grow it. And it's a good experience. And it's probably a good idea to learn all of the different facets of growing.
So that's legal to
grow, starting
in January, to grow yourself?
You can do it today.
Okay.
You can have so many plants today, but
it's
not
just
that many.
The selling part that there are a lot of
legal... You don't want to sell it to anyone else, just self-consume.
Investing from the standpoint of, for instance, investing in businesses that either grow like yourself or that are associated with this industry, what kind of opportunity is there there?
There's so much an opportunity for a young person to come in and take a little piece of whatever they might want to do. They might want to get a job in a dispensary. They might want to be a professional grower. They might want to be in the distribution. They might want to be in the security side of it. Depending on what you're looking at, it's important that you read as much as you can and go into an area that you feel comfortable with.
And on a related note, there is a ton of profitability in this industry. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I can. Today, because of the banking regulations, you can only take in cash. And it's a little difficult to run a business only on cash. You have to pay your employees. You got to pay for other vendors. So over a period of time, the state of California is probably going to change that. And we'll have some type of banking in the state of California. Hopefully, it'll change on a federal level also. On a profitability side, it's a very good business. It's extremely profitable to be in this business. And if you are able to get into a business, you would do very well. It's just like any other business. You still have to work hard at it.
Of course, we have viewers and listeners beyond California. So where do you think this industry is headed nationwide?
That's a great question. The state of California is probably the sixth largest economy in the world. 40 million people here in the state of California. There are a lot of people using cannabis, and this is the state to really be in. If you are in another state and it's a smaller marketplace like Nevada, Washington, Oregon, or Massachusetts or Pennsylvania, there are different markets that are much smaller, but there are opportunities to be in your local market.
Do you think more states where right now marijuana is illegal, do you think that they will start to legalize it?
Well, there's 27 states here that are in some way recreational or medically approving. As time goes on, there'll be more and more and more states, but that'll be over a period of time. California is, of course, the large one to be in. And if you're in California, you should take advantage of it.
So if someone does want to get into this industry, what resources are available to them to start learning more?
Well, YouTube, the internet, books, magazines. The internet is a wonderful source.
What have you found most helpful?
You know, YouTube is actually wonderful. It actually shows you how to grow it step by step and inch by inch. It's a wonderful source to actually learn how to grow. They have hundreds and hundreds of videos, and they're really interesting. It really teaches you from the beginning to end. It's the most wonderful source to use.
So tell me a little bit more about your work background and what got you into this industry.
Commercial real estate for many years, investment banking. Commercial real estate allowed us to actually know how to purchase the property, to get our entitlements, get our permits. My construction background is working with different contractors to build it. And the combination actually worked really well.
What industries do you think are going to be affected for better or worse by this big boom in the cannabis industry that we're about to see?
Well, you know, the beer industry is a $109 billion industry. Marijuana with the recreational and the medical will be over $50 billion in a couple of years, at least 50% of the beer industry. That's amazing. What a growth industry this is. It really is a growth industry.
Lastly, what is your number one piece of advice for aspiring entrepreneurs?
Really know what you're doing. Read the material. Watch YouTube. learn what you're doing, and you have to have a passion for it.
And you obviously have a huge passion for the cannabis industry.
I have a big passion for this. Yes, I do.
Very cool. Well, thank you for sharing your passion with us and giving us some insight into the cannabis industry.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
I know.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Business rock stars.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. You pay just $30 for a month's supply. And right now, get your first online doctor's visit totally free when you go to forhims.com/joy. That's right, free. Zero copay, no expensive appointments, no awkward face-to-face conversations to get your prescription. Hims connects you to doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe your ED medication. And a pharmacy sends it right to your door. Hims makes it affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/joy. That's forhims.com/joy for your free...
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We've got Caroline Rothwell in the building. She's the president and founder of Carol Marketing. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your company. What do you guys do?
I established Carol Marketing in 2004. We're fashion and influence come together. And we do marketing and PR services and brand development services for fashion clients.
What you were telling me about is, which I think is interesting, is how you went from doing like fashion consulting to now consulting giant people that own giant shopping malls and stuff like that. How do you go from being in the fashion space to becoming like a high-end, high-paid marketing consultant that helps huge businesses? Because I know people that are in the fashion space and they're not shifting over to where you did. What did that process look like?
The ironic thing that happened was they found me.
What do you mean? Give me an example.
One example is I was sort of invited to an event. And next thing I know, I'm being introduced to certain people and they were vetting me and I didn't quite understand they were vetting me.
Yeah. And like people with like $100 million net worths. And
yes. So you never know who's watching. You never know what they're bringing you in for.
Sounds like whoever made that connection for you, you owe them a favor.
I know. I'm very indebted
Changed
to those
your life.
People. Yeah. And I think the other thing is too, just having the agency for so long. I work with baby brands and I work with large established brands. Okay. I've built a couple brand empires. So I think people take notice. And if they're looking for a refresh, they're looking for someone that could come in and kind of get the job done.
Okay. That's what they're looking for. Someone who can get the job done.
Yeah.
You're the special agent they hire.
Kind of, yes.
So I want to know what the journey looked like for you, because at the end of the day, it's one thing to jump forward like we have right now, which is the success, what you've accomplished.
Yes.
But I want to go back to the beginning. I want to know what it was like. Was it easy? Was entrepreneurship always on the radar? Did you have a job you hated? Paint the picture for us.
What's interesting is I was very much on the track to become a lawyer.
Are you happy that you didn't go that direction?
I'm very happy.
Okay.
It took me a while to kind of accept that, because I think you have a much safer track. And you kind of can anticipate what your future is going to look like.
If you were an attorney.
If you were, yeah. You kind of know where you're going to go.
Usually. Not always, though.
Not always. I mean, you can shift in partnership and do different types of...
I guess it's different. If you're an attorney who starts their own practice versus an attorney who works for a business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, it was kind of interesting. I always stayed in politics, but what happened was instead of going into environmental politics, I stayed in the arts. And so I worked for Al Gore for a little bit and did some environmental work with Al Gore. And then I worked with Tsongas. And then I worked with Tom Ridge, the governor of Pennsylvania. And that's where they shifted me into arts education. Secretly, I was also signed to an independent record label. So I was all performing in New York and opening for some big bands. And I kind of had that secret life going. And I was looking for something creative. I didn't want to remain in my Navy suit. I was only 25. And I felt like there had to be more out there for me. Luckily, someone saw my CV in the political system and flew me to Los Angeles out of the governor's office. And I secured a corporate communications position at a young age. And I worked in the tech space. And they flew me up to San Francisco. And that's when I knew I wanted to stay in California and kind of explore my options out here. So it was kind of a wayward road that took me in. But since I was a child, I always loved fashion. My stepfather's mother would take me on buying sprees in Philadelphia to Filene's basement and just the energy. Yeah. And I was obsessed. My other grandmother, rich in tradition, a big old Southern home, and we would be in the attics and dressing and playing. And then as a musician, when I was on stage, it was all about wardrobe and styling. Yeah. And so it was always kind of in the back of my mind, but I never thought that it would be a career. And then flash forward in LA, I met a man who was really passionate, who bought a trademark for a fashion company. And he said, I like your style. I love your understanding of pop culture and vintage and process and retail. And do you want to give it a go? And he took a total chance on me. I made peanuts and it was a passion project. I left my corporate role and I took it on and I became their vice president within 3 years. And we built a $150 million company.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So.
So for people out there, though, that I feel like a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, the problem why they never jump off the fence or why they wait so long to finally cut the cord from their job and go all in on their dreams is because they don't feel like they're certified, qualified, have the credentials. So my question for you is, for the people out there who are saying, look, I want to do this with my life or my career or my business, but I don't know if I have the knowledge, the skill sets, the resources, the connections, the credentials, the qualifications. What do you say to something like that?
I say, just be the best at whatever it is that you're doing. And whatever it is you want to attempt to do, surround yourself by those that can kind of guide you in the right direction. Do your own homework. I mean, the resources and everything that's available to you. Be forthcoming, be honest about where you are in your career, but never be afraid to try something different. Because honestly, it's probably already set its course and you're probably already on your way to getting there. It's just the journey. So never be intimidated or afraid that you're walking into a new territory you're not prepared for.
What about fear and rejection though? Because I think when most people are on their journey, I completely align with everything you said. Even with that, the biggest fear all people have is fear of not being worthy, fear of rejection, fear of failure. We may not consciously say that or align with that, but that's what it is.
The hardest part.
The biggest reason why we're not having the income, the impact, and the life that we want is ultimately because of our fear of if we go after it and we don't get it, then we failed. Or worse, we get it and then we lose it. So why even go after it at all? Why not just live a comfortable life?
I've had both of those scenarios happen. Win it, lose it, go after it, didn't get it. And
how do you keep going and do you bounce back?
You know, I think that that's the number one lesson I've learned as a woman, as an entrepreneur, is that it all comes from the inside. I mean, not to get all new agey on it, but it really comes from a self-balance, a self-acceptance, a self-love that we're doing the best that we possibly can at this moment in time. And if you really believe that and you really are in that space, these things should not impact you. You have to kind of move past that in order to succeed, or otherwise the smallest setback could set you back. There's going to be setbacks. That just comes with it. Humor is also a good thing to know, keep in your life and laugh things off and keep some good friends around you.
Well, let's talk about that because I think most people don't have a very strong inner circle.
Yes.
We've heard the old cliche, but so true saying, which is you're the sum of the five people that you're closest to.
Oh, absolutely.
Meaning if you're closest to your business partner or your loved one or your family or whoever your inner five people are you talk to and hang out with the most, you're probably a similar reflection of them or you've embodied qualities and beliefs and values similar to them.
Correct.
The problem with that is that if they don't have similar values and beliefs and an alignment of going in the direction you want, which may be a healthier life, a more financially abundant life, huge dreams to impact the world, whatever it may be, if they're not in alignment with that, it can be, not always, but it can be more tough to achieve those things. So how do you start to create an inner circle of people that can help push you in the direction that you want in life?
I think for one, you need to kind of listen to yourself. You can kind of get a sense when you're feeling that maybe it's not a good situation for yourself. You have to kind of only trust those that are worthy of your trust. You have to kind of see actions and not just words. So whether it is a friend or whether it's a client, I kind of have the same ethos that sort of, you kind of have to earn the trust and you have to take your time to relationship build. I see a little bit of a struggle sometimes with clients that are very focused on social media, and there's a little bit of a false sense of what their true network really is and how much people honestly care about what it is that they're doing.
Give me an example. What do you mean?
I work a lot with influencers and I work in fashion. So, maybe it's unique in this space, but when you're building your network, there's those that are looking for opportunity to grow their likes and mm-hmm. followers and their financial gain and things like that. It's the same in the celebrity world and entertainment. So you really have to look at the values of the people that you're surrounding yourself with and just keep a good head on your shoulders and trust mm-hmm. your instincts, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know in the influencer space, especially,
it can get tricky. Yeah.
How do people capitalize on social media these days? You brought us into that topic, so I want to pinpoint that, because there's a lot of people out there that maybe say, "I tried social media, it didn't work. We tried Facebook advertising, it didn't work." I hear that all the time because I'm in consulting, and
yes,
we highly advise most people, not always, but for the most part, you should be using social media. You should probably be capitalizing on Facebook targeting and boosting and remarketing. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people out there aren't capitalizing on social media. How are you guys doing that? Or how do you advise people to do it?
Well, for some, their needs are just a little bit different. So it doesn't work for everyone.
Exactly. It doesn't work for everybody.
I think that that's sort of the myth. And, mm-hmm. The myth prior to that or, before 2008 was, celebrity endorsement is going to make it happen. And not always. Maybe,
Not everyone can be doing the exact same thing with.
Exactly. So I think differentiating yourself from the rest of the market and really honing in on your unique qualities and your unique values and benefits to the people that are engaging with your product or you as a person. And going back to the basics, we do this a lot with some of our huge corporate clients, even with social media, where we have to just bring it down to its essence and really stay within that framework. I think with social media, when it doesn't work, is they're trying to emulate those out there that are successful and spending more time on, the looky-loos, like who's over the fence versus what am I doing and am I staying on brand? Am I staying true to the audience? Community management, I always say, that's the key.
Yeah.
Is, spending time with your community and engaging.
You got to be able to build the community first.
Exactly.
But I agree. Facebook.
But even if you have 25 to start, you can target them and you can boost and you can Insta story all you want.
Most people undervalue the small 25 that they start with.
They do. Because you never know who's, look at the person who vetted me for that consulting job. You never know.
That's true. You never know what's going to lead to that $100 million company.
Exactly.
Somebody says they want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, or maybe even follow you on social media. Where can they do that?
They could follow me at Caro Marketing, and that's the tag for everything. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, everything. You can find me there or caromarketing.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Caroline.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, or online at businessrockstars.com.
Do you or your business need a better social media presence? Use these few tips to help harness the power of social media. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, quality over quantity. The goal isn't about bombarding users with posts. Ensuring that the posts are targeted towards your market will help you to gain the most traction while also adding more followers. Number two, comment, share, and like often. Genuinely like, comment, and share others' posts every single day, developing relationships with people over time. Now, this won't happen overnight. If you don't give people the time of day, you can't expect them to do the same for you. Number three, don't always be self-promoting. It's not always about promoting. If you want to leverage social media to grow your business, you have to spend a lot of time delivering value. Don't always try to sell people something at every chance you get. Otherwise, you might be putting them off. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Ah. Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, and it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. I am joined by Viola Lee. She's the co-founder of Raw Green Organics, and we're going to talk about overcoming obstacles in entrepreneurship today, which there are a lot of them, aren't there? Just yes. A few that you probably encountered. Let's start from the beginning when you transitioned from more of a 9-to-5, maybe it was 9-to-6, 7 job, to starting your business. What was the first obstacle you encountered?
I think the first obstacle is you really need to make a commitment and just go for it. When you start worrying about, well, am I going to get, you know, am I going to start making X amount of dollars? Is it going to come in? Am I going to get it funded within the first month? I mean, you can't, that just has to go out the door. You have to make a commitment and just go for it and know that you may or may not have a salary for a while.
I always say that, right? No, I always say that entrepreneurship is so much mental too. You have to maintain your confidence and, you know, it's natural for fear, self-doubt and worries to creep in. But how do you deal with those icky feelings and move past them?
Well, I would have to, if I were to say I woke up every morning thinking, wow, this is, I'm on the top of the world, I'd be lying.
Yeah. Which is refreshing. So yeah, thanks for being honest.
I'd be lying. There are so many things out there. And as an entrepreneur, sometimes when you start, you don't know what you don't know. So you might think that you have a great plan because you're really good at one thing and you know, you never fail. Everything that you plan seems to work out. And you might think that you've had a couple backup plans and things are going to work out, but there's always going to be a bump in the road in everything you do. And I think the one thing is to never be afraid of failing. And that's okay because you have to have thick skin, you'll fail, or someone's going to say that, you know, that was a stupid idea, or that is completely idiotic and fine. You know, you take what they have to say, you know, look at it, and there's never any bad advice. All advice is somewhat good advice because it's something that you didn't know before, right? And I think that you just take that and you just keep on going. You can't be afraid to fail.
How do you differentiate the people who are giving constructive criticism and maybe destructive criticism? Because there's a lot of haters out there, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, people with there are going to be both. People with constructive criticism are going to give you criticism on a product and they'll tell you why. Because of these four things.
And they have your best interest in mind.
They have your best interest, right? Definitely. And their views may or may not be wrong. or they might be right. I'm not sure, but you should definitely take them into consideration. And then there are people who just tell you, well, that's stupid. But why? And they're just maybe writing you off because it's not important to them, or they don't find that it's interesting. So, you know, there's something for everyone, and not everyone's going to be interested in what you do.
And going back to the failure part, it sounds like a lot of it's just perspective. Instead of seeing it as, oh, shame on me, I made a mistake, it's like, okay, I can learn from this, right?
And definitely. So if you're in a job before where you might have been the A-plus student, A-plus employee, and you're always, you know, going through projects and you are the best of the best and you always did it well. But sometimes it's different when you don't have as many resources. You have to make do with what you have. And things are not going to be perfect. You may not have a perfect business plan the first time around. And a business plan always, God, it's always changing. It's always changed like a moving target. So when you fail, it's just, it happens.
Just pick yourself back up and keep moving forward.
Pick yourself up and keep on going, because if you believe in something, then that's all that matters. Just keep on going for it. And that's what's going to drive you.
Yeah. And you've known a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs who have started and then all of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is a lot harder, takes a lot more work than I thought. Would you say that that's true, that it is harder than people think?
Well, it definitely is, because when you're starting out, you might not have all the team members that you need. You know, maybe there might be like four people or five people. And let's say you need the creative person. Oh, shoot, but we don't have the creative person. We need the salesperson, the marketing person. And you're not going to be able to do that. So as an entrepreneur, you're going to have to wear multiple hats. And a lot of times when you're great at being a team player or great at being an executor, sometimes you have to step aside and be more of a mentor for your other team members. And that can be harder at times.
So what about when you're just starting out and you are wearing multiple hats, but maybe you don't know how to wear some of those hats? Did you just have to learn on the go, or how did you educate yourself?
Oh, you definitely, when there are no resources, you definitely learn as you go. You know, you have your base plan of what you need to execute on, and then you just go down the path. You might not be a logistics expert, but guess what? You're going to try to be, and you try to get as much advice from people as you can in the industry. There's always free advice. So if you can get it, take it. We always try to look for different people for advice, if we can find board members. And there's always people willing to help you. And that's part of the thing about failing too. So a lot of times people say, well, you know, I got rejected by this investor or that investor. But guess what? You know, in that 15 minutes, that even though he said, nope, thanks, why don't you go find another lead and maybe, you know, we'll call you or whatnot. But they'll give you some kind of advice in there. There's going to be constructive criticism that you're going to be able to take and say, shoot, I didn't think about that. Now you learn and you're smarter for the next time around.
Totally. Now, it's very busy being an entrepreneur. How do you maintain a little bit of work-life balance?
Well, for me, now that I have a two-year-old, it is tough. I just have to squeeze it in. If anything, working out is like, I actually have to pencil it into my calendar.
Is that one of the tips you have for entrepreneurs, is actually scheduling outside of work things?
Yes, scheduling in the workout. It's scheduled. It's on the calendar, you know, at 7:40 in the morning, it's scheduled in. And sometimes if it's a 40-minute workout, it's a 40-minute workout. You get a spin class in, it's great. And, you know, I try to multitask too. So I have a long commute. So I do all my calls in the car. I try to get as much done as I can on my kind of downtime.
And I know a lot of moms who are entrepreneurs sometimes feel guilty. Do you ever have that feeling, and how do you deal with it?
Well, the time, because I'm trying to rush home thinking, okay, I'm going to get home next to no shoot. Another hour has gone by, another hour has gone by. And by the time I get home, it's, let's say, 9 o'clock. My poor kid's already in bed and I can't wake him up. And then I might get some time with them in the morning, but then I'm off to work again. So I do feel guilty. So when I actually have downtime, I try to spend as much time as I can with my son. I end up lugging him around with me wherever I go as well. And just make an activity.
Totally. Thanks so much to my guest, Viola Lee.
Welcome to Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. Our guest today is Kelly Steckelberg, CEO of Zoosk. It's an online dating site with more than 35 million members. Steckelberg was named CEO a little more than 2 years ago. It is her first time out as a CEO. Kelly, nice to have you here.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, much of your background is in finance and accounting. As you were building your career, did you at any point aspire to be a CEO?
I really didn't think I would ever be a CEO. No, my really? Ultimate goal was to be a public company CFO. And I came to Zoosk as a CFO to ready them for an IPO eventually. But along the way, I realized what an amazing job our founders were doing and how fun it was. And when at some point they presented me with the opportunity and talked to me about it, I was thrilled to take on the role of CEO.
What's been the most surprising thing to you about being in this role?
I think the most surprising thing is how much I've learned. I've gotten to learn a lot about marketing and product and engineering and how integral, of course, all of those aspects are to running the business. The best part about it, of course, is our team. I love our employees. I love our team. And getting to work more closely with the whole business every day has been really, really fun.
Well, you know, the online industry, dating industry is huge, right? It's estimated at $2 billion. Yeah. A lot of insiders, though, think that that's actually a low estimate. Yeah. So the potential is actually quite big, if you think about it. There are a lot of sites that are trying to capitalize on this market. What would you say makes Zoosk better or so different?
Yeah. So I guess a couple things I would say. Zoosk is a premium dating site, meaning you have to pay to talk to someone. So we think that shows a high level of intention for serious daters.
How much do you have to pay, by the way?
The average subscription is about $30 a month.
Okay.
And so that clearly differentiates it from the free sites, right? We think that there's a world where free and paid live well in harmony, right? But as people are more serious, they graduate up to a paid site. The other thing that's different about Zoosk is we are a worldwide company. About half of our members are outside of the U.S.
In the UK, right, is where the company started?
We were started here, but our biggest market was initially the UK. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2010 when the U.S. became the biggest market.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are the stepping stones that got you to where you are now?
Well, as you said, I started in accounting, in public accounting, actually. And along the way, I just took as many different opportunities as I could, including I moved to Amsterdam for 3.5 years. I was the finance director for a U.S. Company, but in Amsterdam. I did a tax rotation. So I just kept learning more and more aspects around finance and accounting. And then when I came to Zoosk, I was the CFO, but then they offered me the COO role as well. So again, that's when I started to learn more about operations and running a business. So it was just incremental gaining that experience that prepared me for eventually, you know, taking the big step of becoming CEO.
So what was your first paying job?
My first paying job.
We're going way back now.
Okay, well, my first paying job was actually cleaning houses.
Really?
I was in high school, but I couldn't drive, you know. And so I had to find places that I could walk to and cleaning houses. And then once I finally got my license, then I worked in the fabric department of Anthony's department store in Kerrville, Texas. So
how would you say those early jobs molded you into who you are today?
I think early on, I learned to take responsibility, and having some money of my own helped me understand what the potential was to create my own future. And I loved it. I loved working. I loved, again, having my own money, and I loved the responsibility that came with it.
All right. What was the worst job you had growing up?
The worst job?
Could be paid or non-paid.
Nobody likes doing chores around the house when you're a kid, I guess, right? But even that, my parents did it. We did it. It was instilled from an early age how we shared responsibility in our household.
So. And that led you to do a really good job when you were cleaning houses
for money. For money. Yep.
All right. I'm Twee Boo, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. And of course, you can always find out more information by going to npm.com. My guest today is Kelly Steckelberg, CEO of the online dating site Zoosk. Now, what do you think are the most important traits for a CEO?
Well, I think first and foremost, the big thing that you have to do as a CEO is ensure that your team is motivated and your employees are aligned to your objectives and ensuring that their morale is good. And that's difficult, right? When a company, especially when a company is going through ups and downs, as our company has. I think the other thing is you're a marketer first and foremost. Like, you have to be the biggest evangelist for your company. And I love doing that for our company. I love being out and talking to other CEOs, yeah, other industry leaders, and to our customers as well.
Do you have to do a lot of fundraising as well as the CEO, or not really?
We haven't done any fundraising since I have been the CEO. The founder mm-hmm. certainly did a fair amount of that before yeah. I stepped into this CEO role.
So they spared you the
yeah,
pain
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. I got to do some of it with them as the CFO, but never have led it as the CEO.
What do you think will be the next big thing in online dating?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And the thing I think that all of these industry leaders are trying to figure out, I'm sure you've heard a lot about potential augmented reality as mm-hmm. part of this. I think also think about home automation, right? You're used to getting your news maybe in the morning from your Google Home. That's how I do it. But imagine if they could also help you review your matches for the day, right? Or maybe see it up on your TV, right, through Apple TV. I think these are all the ways that you're going to see online dating continue to evolve.
Oh, are you guys actively exploring any of those areas for Zoosk?
We're actively exploring all of them,
all
actually.
Of it. Interesting.
So, yeah.
Now, who's been the biggest influence in your life? Do you have a lot of mentors?
No. I say, if you ask me really the biggest influence in my life, of course, has to be my mother, right? Super strong woman. I have two sisters, raised us all to be strong, independent women.
Was your mom an entrepreneur herself?
No, she was a stay-at-home mom until I was in high school. But mm-hmm. she's the kind of the example I always give is like one time I wanted to be on the tennis team and I didn't know how to play tennis. She's like, well, let's learn, right? And
yeah.
we started going to the tennis courts after school and I learned how to play tennis. So she really has a can-do attitude that I think she instilled in all of us. And then since I've been working, I have been lucky to have a lot of amazing mentors, both women and men. Karen Richardson, who was the CEO of Epiphany, was a strong mentor of mine. Robin Washington, who is now the CFO of Gilead Sciences, mm-hmm. has been a strong mentor of mine. And Kevin Yeaman, who's the CEO of Dolby. I learned a lot from all of those incredible people.
All big names with a
yeah,
lot of experience.
Amazing. Yeah, really lucky to have known them.
Tell me about the toughest part about being a first-time CEO.
The toughest thing I had initially, of course, was learning curve. I knew a lot about, obviously, finance. That's my background. But I didn't know much about the engineering aspect of our business, the product, how we make product decisions, and marketing. So the learning curve was tremendous. So I think letting go of that ego and being, you know, saying, okay, I'm just going to ask a lot of questions and take it all in. And then, unfortunately, one of the decisions that I had to make within the first few weeks of my tenure as CEO was to reduce our workforce. And
that's always hard.
Yeah, it was very, very difficult. I think for our leadership team to accept, and then, of course, to even have to go through the execution of that was very, very difficult.
And then how did you deal with that?
Well, we tried to be as open as we could with our employees about why we were making this decision and, of course, to handle the process in the best way that we could. And going forwards from there, sharing with our employees how we were progressing. And we learned a lot through that. Our employees gave us a lot of feedback and we have continued to kind of, I would say, hone our communication style at our company as a result of that.
What's the one thing that you did not do in your career that you wish you had?
I wish that I had taken another international rotation. I did one where I lived in Amsterdam, but I wish that I had spent some time in Asia. I think it's an amazing market. I think you can probably only really learn about it from being there. And I never did that. And it's probably not going to happen at this point in my career. So,
well, you never know.
Maybe.
Never say never.
That's true.
Is Zoosk in Asia now?
We do have some subscribers and members in international markets, in some of the Asian markets, mm-hmm. but we haven't heavily penetrated it yet. So it's a great opportunity.
There you go.
Yeah.
You could still be based in Asia.
That's true.
When you have employees who make mistakes, how do you handle that?
Yeah, when we have mistakes, first and foremost, I always try to figure out, okay, what's the problem that we have and how do we solve it? Let's figure out how we solve it first.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can come back and figure out why did it happen and what do we need to put in place to ensure it didn't happen again. And people make mistakes, right? We're all human. when we have obviously issues around employee performance, we of course try to do it as very respectfully as we can and not make a big deal out of it, right? Yeah. Again, we've all made mistakes.
So it sounds like you just use it as a learning experience, not a punitive measure.
Yeah. I always believe in giving everyone the benefit of the doubt and, you know, helping them through that situation. Usually when people make a mistake, especially if it impacts the business, they feel terrible, right? Yeah. That they don't need for you to make them feel worse. They already are doing it to themselves, especially when you have high performers like we do at Zeus.
Well, we'll come back and talk more with Kelly Steckelberg about some of the biggest obstacles and failures she's faced and how she scaled the wall to success. Scale the Wall is powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
Deborah's home was stolen. Now, I don't mean thieves stole stuff. I mean scammers literally stole her home. The FBI calls title theft one of the fastest growing white-collar crimes. And this story is why you need Home Title Lock. Deborah says criminals found the title to our home online and filed fraudulent documents claiming they owned our home. Wait, it gets worse. Deborah goes on to say, I was evicted from my own home and $85,000 in equity gone. Nobody believes you can get your home stolen this easily. This is why you need Home Title Lock, because no insurance or bank protects your home from title theft. First things first, go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if your home's title has been tampered with. You need to protect the legal title to your home so you don't end up like Deborah. Go to HomeTitleLock.com now for 60 risk-free days of protection. Again, that's HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Hey there, I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can always find more information by going to npm.com. We all know that entrepreneurs and small business owners face a lot of challenges, especially in the early days. What they need to learn how to do is scale the wall. We are going to discuss the challenges that every entrepreneur faces and how they have overcome those obstacles. Joining me to help me with that is Kelly Steckelberg, CEO of Zusk, an online dating site with more than 35 million members. Steckelberg was named CEO a little more than 2 years ago. It is her first time out as CEO, and it is such a pleasure to have you here,
Thank
Kelly.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
You know, both of Zusk's founders are male, mm-hmm. And they're now in their 30s.
Yep.
You're now their female CEO.
Yeah. Not in my 30s.
I'll let you say that. but you look fab.
Oh, thanks.
But what difference does that make in terms of perspective and how the organization is run?
Yeah. So our founders are amazingly smart men. They're both engineers, and they really approach the business largely driven from the aspect of data, which is really important running any business. And I think that served us very, very well. I think I brought a different perspective, which of course, you know, in online dating, you have male and female customers both, right? And I really wanted to ensure that the perspective of all of our customers, not just female customers, was brought a little more front and center. Mm-hmm. And we've done that over the last few years. So balancing this perspective and listening to our customers, taking that in and then looking at the data, both of those things, I think, have helped us make even a better product to serve our customers.
And so you're looking at data. Are you also looking at maybe an IPO in 2014? You guys had filed to go public and then you withdrew from that. Are you still thinking of heading in that direction now?
You know, right now we're really focused on running our business in the best way possible, right? Building a profitable business that is sustainable gives you lots and lots of choices. As you say, staying private on your own terms, you know, it's really gotten us to a place that we'll be able to decide if and when that makes sense for us.
And then when you want to go public on your own terms, NASDAQ will be here for you, right?
That'd be great.
From a consumer standpoint, are there shifts in expectations or the kinds of people who use your product? And how do you then, pivot to meet those shifts?
Yeah. So the thing that I would say has been the biggest shift recently, of course, in online dating was the advent of mobile devices, right? Mm-hmm. People want to be able to access their dating applications wherever they are. And Zoosk is really well attuned to that because one way that we differentiate our product is you don't have to fill out a lengthy questionnaire. The app is learning about you as you're interacting with the site, as you're indicating who you like. It learns about that and then serves up better and better matches for you. So I think that people expect more responsive, quicker, easier to use apps on their phones. And we've done that.
Have you ever like made the same mistake twice or that never happens? You always learn the first time.
Unfortunately, I would love to say that we've never made the mistake more than once, but you know, that's just not the case, right? At our company, again, back to our communication style, we're really transparent. And so when something happens, we go back and we do a post-mortem and see what we learned from that and try to make sure we don't do it again. But fortunately, you know, things happen. We're all human.
Well, I like that level of honesty, actually. Yeah. Does it ever happen a third time?
I'm happy to say that nothing major has happened a third time since I've been the CEO. So
second time, that's it.
That's it.
Nip it in the bud.
From there. Yes. Yeah.
So when you hit a brick wall, how do you work your way through that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, every role, I think in every position has frustrations, and we certainly have had our share of those, or I've had the share of those as being a CEO. But what I always try to do is step back for a minute and think about it and think about, okay, how are we going to solve this? How are we going to prevail? Because lucky enough, I've been through enough differences or travails in my career that I know you can get to the other side of that brick wall. And you have to remember what that feels like to get there. And then step by step by step, push through and figure out how you're going to solve it. You just can't give up. You just can't give up.
Just right? Got to keep at it.
Yeah.
I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, where we talk about the hard realities of failure in business and the challenges as well. It's powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can always get more by going to npm.com. And here with us now is Kelly Steckelberg, CEO of Zoosk. Are you guys profitable?
We are. I'm happy to say that the company actually has been profitable for the last eight quarters.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That.
Yeah,
now,
great.
You've got a giant competitor out there, right, in Match, right? It's like the 800-pound gorilla.
Yes,
it's got close to $1 billion in revenue. And then there's eHarmony, there's OkCupid, there's Coffee Meets Bagel. There are a ton of dating sites. How do you manage all that? I mean, how tough is that competition and trying to, you know, still distinguish yourself?
Yeah. You know, certainly Match has done a great job and are the leader in this space, but dating is a very personal thing. And so there's an opportunity that's why there are so many, I think, dating apps in this space. As you mentioned, that there's really at this end, and then there's a bunch of apps at the small end. You know, I would say it's really easy to create an app. It's really difficult to get scale. And we've certainly done that. As you said, you know, we have over 35 million members around the world, and it's going to be difficult for a lot of the newer, more recent apps to scale to that level. And then I think people just want alternatives, and that's why Zoosk is a great alternative to some of the other more casual sites, but also, you know, we're easier to use than some of the more serious sites. Mm-hmm. So I think we're a great alternative for anybody who's looking for a serious dating site.
Okay, now that you've been in the CEO seat, what are the three biggest lessons to learn in starting or growing a business?
Okay, let's see. The first thing that I would say is you better love what you're doing, right? This is an all-encompassing job, I think, whether you're an entrepreneur, a founder, or a CEO. And so you better love it because you really can't fake it. Secondly, I would say as you're growing a business, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't get ahead of yourself by doing too much fundraising. Don't get ahead of yourself by hiring too many employees. Don't get ahead of yourself by building that big, huge office. All of those things will limit your flexibility as you move forward. And flexibility is key. You know, business dynamics change. And I guess thirdly, which might be the most important though, make sure that your idea is really solving a problem or a need. If you love it, but no one else does, it's really not going to matter.
Yeah.
So better really pay attention to what your customers and what the market's telling
you. There's got to be a market fit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you unwind? You sound very busy.
You know, my favorite thing to do when I'm not working is to travel. I love exploring the world. I've been to about 60 countries. And
really?
Yeah, my goal is to make it to 100, which I'm sure I'll get there someday.
So. Do you have a favorite? I know that's probably a hard question.
Oh, you know, I'm really partial, if you will, to Barcelona. That's one of my favorite cities in the world.
Las Ramblas, right?
Yeah,
that whole walkway is crazy.
Yeah, the food, the architecture, everything about it's great. And then, of course, a sandy white beach is always a favorite location as well. So.
And those you can find in many places
Lots
around the
great
world.
Places, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's so good to have you here. Good
Thank
luck
you.
In
Thank
your
you.
Tenure as CEO at Zeus.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Kelly Stuckelberg, thank you. Thanks to my guests, and thank you to you for tuning in. Join us every Friday as we scale the wall powered by NASDAQ Private Market. You can stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Ian Roth. We see it listed on food labels and hear healthcare professionals talk about it, but do you know what cholesterol actually is? Cholesterol is a waxy substance that's found in the fats in your blood. When you have high cholesterol, you may develop fatty deposits in your blood vessels, which eventually make it difficult for enough blood to flow through your arteries.
That bad cholesterol, when those plaques build, if they rupture, they can go and cause a heart attack or even cause a stroke.
Dr. Claire Haga, a Mayo Clinic physician, says what you eat affects your cholesterol levels, so you have some power to control it.
We want to make sure to eliminate trans fats. So examples of trans fats, a lot of this is going to be your products that are prepackaged, your fast foods, your fried foods.
You also want to cut back on saturated fats that are often found in animal products like bacon or butter. Dr. Haga says you can also help lower your cholesterol when you take in more omega-3s, which are good fats that you find in fish, nuts, and avocados. For more information,
this is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, and our rock star today is Natasha Case. Hi, Natasha.
Hi, how's it going?
CEO and founder of Cool House. What is Cool House?
Cool House is an architecturally inspired, very unique, cool dessert company, really known for our ice cream sandwiches. Mm-hmm. We also have pints and bars sold from trucks, our brick and mortars, and distributed at 4,000 grocery stores all around the country.
And wildly successful because you started only, 9 years ago, right?
Seven in 2009.
7 years ago, yeah.
We've grown a lot since then.
That's better. Well, let's talk about the journey. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
You know, I look back and I see the seeds are being sown, but I don't think that it was kind of presented as an option. It kind of more got to it by default.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really exciting is I do a lot of like mentoring and, you know, with younger and younger kids, and they're so much more aware of entrepreneurship. So I think that's really changing and more people will have their sights set on that.
Yeah, I find that sitting in this chair to be the truth that people, the standard get out of college, get a job, 9 to 5,
yeah,
you know, get a pension. It's kind of going away, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Alternative. Yeah, yeah, thinking outside the box. And, you know, there's just so much awareness about business, how to start up. And so more and more people are really doing their own thing.
Ice cream, why?
So my background's actually architecture. I studied for 7 years. And I just became really interested in how to make architecture more fun and accessible for people.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything cool should be accessible, not the other way around.
Right.
So I started playing around with using food to get people more engaged in the architecture conversation. And I called it Farkitecture. I went to Berkeley, so you know you have to have like a movement, a manifesto, you know, from up there. And I just started playing around, you know, with what that could mean. And then my first job out of grad school was Disney Imagineering, and the recession hit. So as part of like lightening the mood at the office, I started baking cookies, making ice cream, naming the combination after architects. And it was literally comic relief for people who were being laid off.
Sometimes the easiest things, I love that Berkeley campus. Is Mel's bookstore still open?
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew him. Always a cigar in his mouth. No ice cream for Mel.
We have a cigar flavored ice cream, though.
You do?
Yeah.
You can go over to Mel's
Cuban
bookstore.
Cuban cigar. Yeah.
It seems like most of the people that are really successful follow their dream on something they know something about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier that way, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so. I think you can also, the dream can mean different things. So, you know, I was going down this path of design and then I realized in introducing this ice cream dialogue around architecture, mm-hmm. it still needed, you know, packaging design, a logo, website. And so I've still been able to apply a lot of those skills and be in the food business, which is, I mean, if I told my five-year-old self what I'm doing now at 33, like I'm an ice cream lady, I'd be like, that sounds pretty good to me.
It sounds like a dream job. It's a dream job. And it's wildly successful, as we said earlier, and you've been written up everywhere. Who's your favorite entrepreneur?
Oh, that's a great question. I am a big fan of, I like Richard Branson a lot. Mm. I mean, he definitely, you know, talk about a brand being an umbrella for so many things. I think that's a really great approach because then the world is your oyster. You know, you can go from record label to airline to cola to phones. It may not all be successful, but that's kind of the entrepreneur's right. You're allowed to fail too.
Richard Branson's name comes up in here more than anybody's.
Really?
More than Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think Richard Branson also seems like a pretty nice guy. I don't know him personally, but right. I think that he's really, for me, Steve Jobs is, definitely an icon. I think his style of how he made his, mission happen is
pretty brutal.
Yeah. Thank you. So, you know, you can probably see I like to smile a lot and, you know, keep things pretty happy and fun. So it's maybe just a different approach.
what was the scariest thing about stepping out on your own?
You know, I had been kind of going down this path, mm-hmm. you know, studied architecture undergrad and grad school. My dad's an architect. Actually, my dad's an architect and my mom is an animator at Disney. And I always thought they had the coolest jobs, but I wanted to do something totally different. And then my first job was architect at Disney. So mm-hmm. I couldn't have been more like the two of them. But, you know, you're sort of on this path and all of a sudden you say, whoa, I'm going to take a total left turn. You know, we bought this truck, you know, off Craigslist for $2,500 with my personal credit card and doing, you know, this ice cream kind of vision. It was just so not that sort of, you know, going along this idea that you have that's very clear cut. But I think, you know, I was 25 when I started the company, so you're pretty comfortable with risk at that point.
Yeah.
So it's not like that overwhelmed me. I mean, I just sort of thought, we have this vision,
what
someone
hell,
has to
right?
do it. Yeah, yeah. Nothing to lose, you know, so.
Natasha Case is our guest. She's the CEO and founder of Cool House, HAUS, right?
Right.
I like that that spelling on that.
Yeah.
So architecture and ice cream, what makes it good?
I mean, it's
not
obvious.
No, not to me anyway. But what makes it click?
So I think one thing is just with ice cream or with so many brands, folding in a whole other audience that you wouldn't expect. You sort of think of Ben and Jerry's and rock and roll. I mean, they did that so well. It doesn't necessarily belong there, but the more you sort of integrate it into that world and think of it at like, you know, the Woodstock, like ice cream
right.
and Cherry RC and all that, you're like, okay. And it folds in this other world. You know, architecture may not be as big of a reach as you know, rock and roll, but we all are existing in spaces all the time. So it's just a great way to, if people want to learn about architecture by the names of our flavors, like Frank Berry, Mintimalism, Richard Meyer Lemon, Louis Bacon, which is our bacon ice cream, great. If they don't learn about it, like no harm, no foul. But also for me, I think one of the biggest things that's come out of this is brands need design and they need strong visuals more than ever. So if you have that kind of architecture mind, and you think about every little thing is going to be designed and how is it going to tell a story, it actually has been an incredibly handy background for running a business. Yeah.
Do you have any friends? It's surprising. It's surprising how many people say no immediately because you're working so hard
yes.
that you don't have time for friends.
Well, you'd be surprised how many friends ice cream gets you. So,
have you found a solution for ice cream headaches?
Well, you know, that does tend to plague the industry to some degree. However, what I will say is ice cream is
don't eat so fast, right?
Don't eat so fast. And you want ice cream to be right around 0 degrees, not like minus 10, because you start to taste things more. Your taste buds can taste things better when it's not super, super frozen. So if you just give it those few extra seconds, you'll have a better experience and you won't get, you know, brain freeze.
How about the work-life balance?
I think, you know, 7 years in, something I can say is I feel that I have gotten to that place where I have it. Part of that is the luxury of having an amazing team around you.
where I was just in, my wife and I went to the Amalfi Coast for 2 weeks, actually on a baby moon. She's almost 6 months pregnant. And I wasn't worried about leaving everyone behind. You know, it was like, I know I have everything in good hands with them. They can, you know, tackle the obstacles. We have systems, we have accountability. And I think that to me is like, you know, it makes me feel that I'm, you know, have achieved success, which of course I want so much more, but a certain level of success is that I can, you know, step away and everything's not going to fall apart.
Who gave you your first great piece of advice?
One of our angel investors is kind of a mentor coach named Bobby Margolis, who did Cherokee Jeans back, really kind of grew it more in the 90s.
I also love Bobby's name. Bobby Margolis.
Exactly.
I'm going to call Bobby Margolis.
You know, he loves his tequila. He's right? A great golfer. Yeah. He said, you can walk through a wall when you don't know it's there. And I think that's such incredibly valuable advice to, especially young entrepreneurs starting out, because you don't realize all the rules you're breaking. And you just do it. And that's a good thing, because if you're too aware, you're going to just, you know, like kind of tippy tap around it. And that's not going to get you, you know, that's not going to create revolutions right. in business.
On the other hand, Vince Lombardi, the great football coach,
yeah.
used to say, I love players who run through walls for me. He said, but the one that walks around the wall, that's my quarterback.
I love that. It's really good.
What kind of support did you have from your friends when you started?
Really good support. Yeah. I think that's been a huge
everything's
thing.
Everything's clicking, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I'm sure some of them back in their mind, like, okay, let's see how this goes, you right. know? But I think, you know, having that kind of buy-in from your friends and they're excited for you. And it was such a fun business to kind of start out with, like, oh, here's this beat up postal van truck. And okay, this wacky ice cream idea. And it was at a time when, you know, artisan craft food was still really, you know, at its infancy. And then, of course, they're all so proud, like, as we've grown along the way. And many were saying, well, we wouldn't necessarily have thought it, but clearly you guys, you know, stuck with your vision, and congrats to you.
It's so great to have it. I'm not trying to simplify your job, but have your own ice cream truck.
I think that pretty much, you know, if you break it down.
Do you have time for reading and other hobbies and stuff?
Yeah. Know? So let's see. I am, as far as reading, love the New Yorker. I mean, I love the long form. It's so well written. I always, even if
you
I
get
can't.
Get the magazine?
Get the magazine.
Yeah,
I'm
love
that
you.
Age on the yeah. cusp, you know, okay, like yeah. I still like to, but I even if I don't have time for the whole magazine, I always read the restaurant review and the TV or movie reviews. So I feel like I at least got, you know, and maybe Talk of the Town.
Right? And the cartoons are
oh,
spectacular.
I submit the cartoon contest every week.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh, really? We're competing.
I've come close a couple of times.
Yeah?
Oh. But I can't get it now. When you have to make tough decisions, use your gut or do you go out and research?
I would say gut over research, but you want to do a combination of both for mm-hmm. sure. Because, you know, you there's a certain amount of checking things out. You don't want to go in blind. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, I think your instinct is going to be the biggest winner.
Well, your gut was right the first time, right? With
so to speak, exactly.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, what was the biggest disaster you had?
Oh, there's so many good ones. I mean,
I love that.
Definitely, you know, the trucks, again, you try to see the silver lining. So the trucks would break down a lot, especially in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one time we were doing a birthday party for Reese Witherspoon when she had the Ojai property.
I love her.
And,
she's so great.
It's so great. And the whole, you know, the whole group that was there was awesome and mm-hmm. lovely, lovely people. And we served it was her kid's birthday, I think. We served, it was great, you know. Right, ready to go. Truck won't start. Uh-oh, now we're stuck at Reese.
For a big event, yeah.
Yeah, and at the most like beautiful property, you know, how are we going to get out of here? Oh no. So they like, you know, end up feeding us dinner and taking care of us until we could finally get the truck to start. So, you know, it's like could look really bad, but then again, there are worse places to get stuck.
When you went to Coachella, what was that like? I mean, I've been to almost every Coachella and it's hot out there.
Yeah, it was hot. It was.
People must have been going crazy.
It was an amazing, just the heritage of the brand starting with that is a really, it's a good legacy. We had our friends who we had given free tickets to come in exchange for helping us work. Mm-hmm. Well, you can imagine that how south that went pretty quickly when people are, you know, oh, here's a free concert.
Right.
You know?
And Coachella.
Coachella, right? We would go tent to tent because we were in the campground. I would give them, you know, ice cream and on dry ice and little freezer bags. And they, you know, we built up the following kind of over the few days, but it was just mayhem. We had to sleep next to the truck in the campground. And no one, you know, after the music ended, then there was like rave music at people's tents till 4 a.m. And one guy, I don't know what he was on, but he thought that like basically the tent we were sleeping in that no one was in it. He said, this tent is so light, no one's in here. He started carrying us around in the tent. We were screaming, we're in here, put us down. It was just like such insanity.
Sometimes those Coachella people,
I know,
they need an ice cream bar now and then.
He really needed one.
Natasha, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
CEO and founder and a really nice person. Of Cool House, is there a website?
Eatscoolhouse.com,
yes. Eatscoolhouse.com.
Yes.
And where's my ice cream?
I know. We'll get you some promise. I was disappointing people not showing up with ice cream.
So. I'm Pat O'Brien, an ice cream lover. We'll be back in a minute.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance. And it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. And over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
Most of us have bought stuff online, but one problem is if you're not home to receive the package. Theft or porch piracy is common now, but one way to help keep those deliveries safe is with DeliveryPod. Mark Morris explains.
DeliveryPod is about solving a central problem of our time. More and more packages are being delivered to people's homes, and DeliveryPod is a secure way of ensuring that the packages get to their destination, that is to say, the inside of your house. We've designed a sleek-looking package box that's internet-enabled, works with your Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, to notify you when a package arrives, secures the package once it is delivered, and notifies you once package delivery has been placed at your house.
It's kind of like a high-tech lockbox for your porch. Check out DeliveryPod.com for more.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
So how important is your circle of influence? We've all heard you're the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. Joining us to talk about the subject with us is Peter Voog. He is the founder of the Game Changers Academy and the author of 6 Months to Six Figures, almost 200,000 copies sold, over 4,000 reviews online. If you haven't got a copy, you got to pick it up. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks,
brother.
Man. Appreciate it. Always good with me and
always
you, man.
Always bringing the fire on the set.
Yep.
So let's talk about circle of influence. And I know we're going to go into a lot of different topics.
So to be very honest, this was probably the biggest game changer for me, perspective-wise, that's ever happened. So I was at a seminar years ago, and I wasn't sure why my business wasn't working. I was so frustrated. I feel like I was letting people down. I was like discouraged. And I didn't notice till like months later, but I went back to read my notes. I'm like in desperation mode. I'm looking at my notes like, what am I doing wrong? And I came upon a quote, yeah. And it will never, like, it will always be with me because it was such a game changer. And it's in my book, but it's, if you want to be a millionaire, talk to billionaires because you'll get there a lot quicker. And I'm thinking in my head, it doesn't literally mean talk to billionaires, although you know some, we both know some. It doesn't mean literally find those. It means find people that have already done what you're doing and they'll cut your learning curve in half. So for me, I realized instantly, oh my gosh, my circle of influence, most of them were broke. And I was taking advice from people just because they were older, just because they had things to say.
They had a little bit more than you.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And I was younger. I was 22 years old, 21, 22. So everyone's like, oh, it's fine if you're broke. You're 21. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Terrible advice.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And my mentor that I had a couple years later made his first million at 21. So big difference there. Yeah. So instantly, I evaluated my circle of influence. And I realized they were affecting my thinking, my standards, my judgment, my action, my decisions. and I just lowered the time I spent with them. So I made what's called a make it or break it list. I think everyone can do this. I figured out my maintenance friends, people that maybe held me down or weren't thinking big, that I felt like I needed to be friends with because I've known them for a long time, but they just, they're not doing the right things. And they just, you're hanging out with people that either hold you to high standards or let you off the hook. There's no other, that's either or. So I wrote a list of my maintenance friends. Then I wrote a list of my growth friends, people that actually challenged me, people that really made me think bigger. And I just lowered the time I spent with my maintenance friends and raised the time I spent with my growth friends. And the biggest thing I could have done then that helped me that I did was I got rid of all toxic people. People that complain, moan, that don't make you feel exceptional. Life is way too short. We've both done this, but how do you feel? Let me ask you, I'll flip it. When you get rid of people that are toxic, that are negative, that don't reach for big heights, what happens when that?
First, I feel like sometimes it's a little scary because there's so much past history most of the time. It's easy to usually cut people out of your life that are short term.
Yeah.
But the people that are like toxic and negative in your life, family and friends, there's a lot of history there. And so first it's scary and it doesn't feel good, but later it feels amazing.
That's like, why lowering the time is the best versus just cutting them out at the beginning. Yeah. And every successful person has done that in a very strategic and honorable way where it's not like you're out of my life, but at some point you have to say enough is enough and you're going to get exactly what you tolerate. If you tolerate being disrespected, you'll always be disrespected. If you tolerate being around toxic people, you always be around them. So I realized that if you're around 5 millionaires, you're going to eventually be the sixth.
Yeah.
If you're around 5 intelligent people, you're going to be the sixth eventually.
Yeah.
If you're around 5 idiots, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
It's inevitable. So that was a game changer for me, Mark. And I wrote a list that night of the 5 people in my company that were doing really well, that had the results I wanted. So people always ask me, how'd you get the 6 figures in 6 months, circle of influence wise? Well, every single person I communicated with that next 6 months was making between $400,000 and $500,000. So I wasn't even connecting with millionaires yet. But if I'm making $0 and I want to get to 100,000 and everyone I talk to is making 500, how can I not get to 6 figures? It's impossible.
They make that in 3 months.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
And they were embarrassed making 6 figures. You want to get around people that are embarrassed. If you want to make a million, get around people that are embarrassed to make just a million.
That's
they will
that
cut your learning curve in half.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, the importance is there's nothing more important than who you surround yourself with on a daily basis, because who you're around is who you become.
So
period.
I think it's tough though for some people because they go,
of course it's tough.
Practical,
if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Practical, makes sense. I'm ready. I can cut these people out of my life, but where can I now, I've cut them out of my life, where can I find these new people? I mean, they can obviously join the Game Changers Academy.
Yep. To be honest, when you have enough reasons, Mark, and I'll answer this the way they probably won't like it, which is fine. If you want it bad enough, if you have enough reasons, you will find a way to find people. For me, I had no other option. I was broke. No one would help me money-wise. I was pissed at the time. Now I thank my mom all the time because she didn't help me out with money. She didn't give me any money. She goes, you have to figure this out on your own.
Yeah.
Best thing that ever could have happened to me, because yes, I had hunger growing up, but there's no better hunger when you go dead broke and you're frustrated and you're discouraged and you don't have anything. I couldn't even go to the drive-thru, right? Mm. So for me, I went around to events, I networked, I reached out and I called 20, 30 people in my company that were at the top. Yeah. Hey, my name's Peter Vogue. You have no idea who I am. I'm a newer entrepreneur. I really need your help. Some didn't help. And some helped. And when I started taking that advice, the best thing happened. I saw results, and that's the biggest motivator. So for people that need to know the next step, you'll know the next step when you're actually ready. When you actually make enough reasons, when you really cut out the toxic people, when you really have the ideal outcome, when you really have your one-page plan and you have clarity, you'll find the right people. They're everywhere. But yeah, my academy has some. Yeah. You know people. You can reach out to people. In my book, actually, I give the exact script. And I was hesitant, but I did it. And a lot of people reach out and say, oh my gosh, I used that exact script and it worked with Tim Ferriss or Vaynerchuk or whatever. Yeah. So I gave the script that I used to reach out to get a hold of Richard Branson or Grant Cardone or Vaynerchuk.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's such simple practical steps in here that if somebody—
I try to give everything in a simplified way.
And if somebody says, Peter Voogd's fire, I want to hear more and more and more of this stuff on a daily basis, not only where can they get a copy of this, but how can they, you know, potentially look at qualifying for the Game Changers Academy?
So GameChangersMovement.com, you do have to apply. We only accept certain type of people that obviously are hungry and serious. gamechangersmovement.com/apply. Cool. I love Snapchat. It's my favorite social media.
Yeah, follow you on Snap.
Ambition 23. YouTube, we put out videos every week. It's 23 Ambition.
They'll be watching this on YouTube.
Yeah.
At some point.
YouTube. Yeah, just follow me and I'd love to connect with you guys. If you have any questions, I really want to stay in tune with the entrepreneurs out there. So just say you heard about this through Business Rockstars and I'll definitely reach out and help you guys out.
Cool, guys. You heard it. 6 months to six figures. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Audible. Over 200,000 copies sold, baby. You got to get yourself one. Brother, always a pleasure.
Appreciate it, man.
Show.
Thank you.
Rocking it. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice.